they asked me, well, have you done live training before? I mean, I did one-on-one training. And I said, yes. And they're like, okay, you're hired. And I'd never taught a class before. It's the only lie I've ever told in my life. They said, we have 25 people coming in. And I freaked out. I called my wife. It's like, hey, I just committed to something I've never done before. Like, I didn't know anything about that stuff. And I finished the class. And then I loved it. Like, I was like, holy crap, I'm born to do this. Like, the people like clapping at the end and telling me thank you. That was a particular type of high that you can't replicate. Like, seeing somebody else feeling empowered after you taught them how to do something, it's a really, really powerful thing.
May I have your attention, please?
We were spending a little over 40 hours a month on manual data importing, exporting, and manipulation. And within a few hours of playing with Geocon, that problem was eliminated. The consolidation for the rollups is ridiculous. You set the template up one time, and then you just copy and paste it across. We've also got the issue of human error that gets involved in that process. And then another thing, just from the client's perspective, to have that consistent deliverable every single month, it really does elevate the perception of the value of the brand. And we were able to eliminate all of that with one platform. And that's why we've been with them for years.
You can upload a bunch of data into your sheet or pull it from one place, manipulate it a little bit, and then push it into QuickBooks too, which is solving a different problem.
Especially if you're offering accounting services as well. Manipulate data outside of QuickBooks. You can make a lot of those changes right in Google Sheets, and it's automatically going to push them back. The best use case I've seen of that is those Ask My Accountant items, you know, where you get a list for your clients. They tell you what category they go into. Normally, you'd have to take that list, go back into QuickBooks, update everything based on the client feedback. You can connect your chart of accounts right to your client dashboard in Google Sheets, make those updates, and it's going to automatically push those chart of accounts updates back in, so you don't have to go back and manually do it and double the work.
That's incredible. Not only is it great for the CFO forecasting, reports, dashboards, and manipulation of that aspect of the data, the viewing of the data, but also on the back end, manipulating it and getting it in there so it is correct. It works hand in hand and on the back end and on the front end.
I'm a big fan of simplicity. I'm very protective of the platforms that I add to my firm. I mean, we're seven-figure firm. My tech stack is literally Carbon, Ignition, Geocon.
Oh, wow.
That's it. That's what we use. So I'm like, this is worth its weight in gold. You got to check out Geocon. It's just it's a no-brainer.
No-brainer, yeah. But I love this. So Geocon, for anybody listening, check them out. It's acon.services.
May I have your attention, please?
Welcome to Accounting High. It's freshman year at a brand new school. Here, we have no rules in place as we're on a mission to set our own traditions. So hang tight and learn with us as we grow. Whether you loved high school or you hated it, here's your chance to be a part of an unforgettable experience redone. While you're here, don't forget to follow us on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you may be listening to us right now so you don't miss out on any new episodes. And feel free to leave us a 5-star review letting us know how the school year is treating you. So sit back, relax, and open your mind because class is in session.
I repeat, may I have your attention, please?
This is another public service announcement brought to you in part
by Accounting High.
The views and events expressed here are
of the next generation of accounting and tech professionals leading this space.
The events and suggestions are not to be taken lightly. Children should not partake in the listening
of this podcast.
Anything else?
Yeah.
So without further ado, introducing the star of our show,
Scotty and Hector Garcia.
We're going to have a problem here.
I am so happy to announce that we have the accountant, the business consultant, the QuickBooks expert, the YouTube star, Hector Garcia, is on with us today.
Hello, Scott. This is awesome, man. Fun times. Let's do it.
Session. Thank you for joining me, homie. We got a lot to talk about. This is the 100th last episode of freshman year. this is the last recording for freshman year. You're here. You made it.
Let's do this, man.
Saved by the bell. What do you want to talk about? We're going to center the conversation around content creation. That's what you've been known for, especially your YouTube channel. But you have a practice. You've had a practice for over 25 years. So we got to get started on that. We got to talk about your practice. We got to talk about some of the new things that you've done and some big news that you've had this year, some big changes that you're making. But let's just get started in how you got started in the whole accounting thing. I know you got your start in the working world at what, Best Buy?
Yeah,
I worked at Best Buy.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did start working in Best Buy in 2001, same year as a terrorist attack. I remember it vividly because I was in the store and it was all over the news on every TV on the screen. So like, I'll never forget, those two things are sort of attached in my mind. But I started working in Best Buy because, a friend of mine from high school, got a job there and he called me. He goes, "Hey man, this is, really chill. You're good talking to people. They need people that can speak both languages, Spanish and English. And, I'm sure you'll get the job like this." And I had just recently had gotten laid off from .com. Remember, the .com bust that happened around 2000, early 2001. So I had just gotten laid off and I had taken basically the summer off. And around September, end of August, September, I started working in Best Buy. And Best Buy taught me a lot of great lessons about just like conversing with people, asking questions. Best Buy
customer
has a really
service.
Customer service. Yeah. Best Buy has a really had always been around that time. I'm not sure about now, but had always had a strong culture around talking to customers the entire time, not just for the purpose of selling them something, but also, an anti-shrink culture. Like if you talk to customers, you talk to customers, they you talk to steal. Customers, and there's somebody that's stealing, they're going to get nervous. And if you're talking to them, it's less likely that they'll steal something. So it's like, you always got to be talking to people. And that sort of like instilled in my brain that talking
to
people.
You were probably a talker anyway.
Yeah, naturally. You know what? I wasn't. but Best Buy brought that out of me. I became a talker. Through my experience there.
One thing they focused on when I was working there, or they emphasized, was we are non-commissioned. Tell customers that, talk about that, because we're just talking to you to help you. We're not trying to upsell you. And that was one of the big, we were all getting paid hourly. We weren't getting paid on commission. So that was a big difference. When I worked at Sears, it was straight commission. So when I'm talking to people, I'm trying to upsell them. I'm trying to sell them a better vacuum, a better TV, whichever one I was selling. Washing machine, but at Best Buy, you could sell them any of those things. You weren't making any money extra. If you sold the protection plans, the PRPs or P2Ps, whatever they called them, the PPP, the protection plans, it wasn't the PPP back then, but yeah, you can make a little bit of extra money doing that. So you learned
funny story about that. When did you work at Best Buy?
Probably around 2021 or 2001, maybe 2002, maybe 2000.
Right, so around that time. So my general manager called the performance service plan, the extra extended warranty, whatever.
PSP, that's what it was. PSP.
The PSP, right. He called it the cheese. And the cheese. I'll tell you how he explained it. He's like, in McDonald's on Wednesdays, you can get, I think it's hamburger, not a cheeseburger, for 29 cents. That's what brings people in the door. Okay. But they ask you, would you like to add cheese to that? And the cheese was 40 cents. So you're like, if you actually truly think about it, if a hamburger is 29 cents and then the cheese is 40 cents, that's where the margin was. So that was sort of explaining to us, listen, that's where the margin is. And then they ask you, would you like fries? Would you like a soda? That would be the accessories. So the entire sales culture in Best Buy was, hey, the laptop that you came in to buy or the TV that you came in to buy, that's just what brings you in the door. That's the 29 cent cheese, but the 29 cent hamburger. But then our job is to sell the cheese, extend the warranty, and the accessories, the cables and stuff like that. That's why they always try to sell your cables over there in Best Buy.
The cables were cheese too, man. The cables were the fries. The cables were the fries and the drink.
Exactly.
They love the monster cables there. So we're going to drive this metaphor, the cheese metaphor, into other things too, at our practices and even on the YouTube stuff, because I think you are the cheese. you're the cheese in accounting by doing all this YouTube stuff and doing all the extras. You're able to drive more business to your firm and create your own personal brand. So let's keep going with your journey on like customer service. You worked from there to Circuit City. Circuit City, I think, was commissioned, were they? Or
yeah, so I did work in Circuit City, but I wasn't on the sales side at that point. I worked sort of in the back end. I was the service installation manager. So
okay.
I'm the one that led the people that went to install TVs. I went to do computer networks. It was kind of like the geek squad of Circuit City. I was there until my brother, who was working also, like my brother and I had similar paths. He worked at Best Buy with me. He worked at Circuit City with me. He left Circuit City. He's like, I'm done with retail. And he went to work for a bank, for Wells Fargo. And I would say about 2 years into it, he also dragged me into the bank. I said, hey man, get out of retail. You know, bank's a really cool job and you get to still work with people. You get to still sort of sell and use your salesmanship, but now you can do it in a suit and tie. You know, you can, and we can do it. It's about money, not about things. So He got me an interview in Wells Fargo in Wachovia back then. And I got a job as a small business banker. And that's where my world turned from sort of retail and sales to more like dealing with small businesses and talking about money. And none of this timeline, I'm an accountant or I have an accounting degree. So at this point, this is all prior to life me learning. Becoming an accountant. Yeah.
Yeah. Life learning. And let me draw the analogy too. The sales stuff and the sales, like forward facing at Best Buy, was more like your YouTube, was more your client-facing type things. And then the back-end stuff at Circuit City was like actually doing the work, doing the taxes, getting dirty into QuickBooks and getting the accounting work done. So still trying to draw these analogies.
I would say that's accurate. Yeah, that's accurate.
Yeah. So you got your CPA at some point in there. Tell me about that journey.
Yeah, so...
And why? Why did you go into that?
Really good question. Why? So when I was in the bank, one thing that we were trained, you know, our leaders told us, you know, as business bankers is, hey, you guys need to network with accountants. You need to network with CPAs because these guys or these people are the true centers of influence. They have all the trust of their customers. If you can get in with the CPA, they're going to send you clients. And it wasn't easy. CPAs are not necessarily people that are easy to network with, and they get bombarded with by a whole bunch of bankers. So through that journey, I was kind of observing the profession from that perspective. Like I'm trying to like, you know, get in there, befriend them, rub elbows with them so we can get some referrals for banking. But there was so much, we were revering the CPA so much that I was very intrigued by, you know, what does it take to be that? You know, why are these people so trusted? Why is all the bankers saying that you have to get the trust of the CPA to get the trust of the small business owner? And that's one of the things that sort of planted the seed that made me sort of admire the profession and look at it with this sort of enigma. However, during the time that I was in the bank, one of my clients, I'll never forget, who he's still my client today. One of my clients that I had befriended also, he was my client and also we became friends. He told me, hey man, I can't stand my accountant. You know, every time I ask for something, it takes forever. You know, I just want to get a P&L and balance sheet so I can give it to you so you can do my commercial business loan or whatever it is. And as you can tell, you know, they keep giving us the stuff delayed, wrong, behind. You should become my accountant. And I'm like, no man, I'm not an accountant. I'm a banker. Mm-hmm. He's like, listen, at this point, you know, I think to me, trust matters more than skill. And I think that you're smart enough where you can learn the skill, but you can never teach that trust. So if you ever were to quit the bank and become my accountant, you count me in as your first client. And that's something that just like that got into my head. It truly did got into my head. And that was in my head at the same time my daughter was born, my first child was born. This is exactly 14 years ago. You said 25 years. I've not been working for 25 years, but I've been in accounting 14 years. So my daughter was born, and the day she was born, this is September of 2008. The day she was born, Wachovia, my job, the bank that I was working in, went under, became insolvent. This is during the 2007, 2008 crash, right? If you remember that real estate financial crisis. So I'm in the hospital, my daughter's there, and I'm like, do I have a job. The next day it gets, there's an announcement that Citibank is going to buy Wachovia. Don't worry, Citibank's going to buy Wachovia. And I was like, okay, cool. I work at Citibank. Maybe I'll move back to New York. I happen to live in New York 1 year of my life through my Best Buy journey. Different conversation. But I was like, cool, maybe I'll get back to New York. I'll be in Citibank. Next day, it's like, no, do over. Not Citibank, Wells Fargo. This was crazy times. The Fed is intervening with the banks. All these banks are becoming insolvent.
You just became a father.
I just became
a
father.
You got no control over what your future is.
Absolutely.
What it feels like.
Absolutely. Before my daughter was born, my wife and I were debating on whether she would go back to work, when my daughter's born, and then literally, this news is happening sort of in the background, as background noise. She's ignoring that. She doesn't care about that. She's looking at my 14-year-old daughter, and she says, Hector, I think I decided I will become a stay-at-home mom, not going back to work. And I was like, I don't even know if I have a job. So, long story short, I didn't lose my job. The Fed, the federal government, funded the banks, temporarily or whatever the bailout was. And I never really truly lost my job, but my wife did stop working. So that was like 40% of our income that disappeared overnight. And then through that pushed me to search for things that she could do on the side, to complement the income. And we looked at multiple things. We looked at, phone customer service that she could do from home. We looked at like translation. We looked at medical billing. We looked at, and none of these things are things that truly she had skills in, but we're like, okay, don't worry, we'll figure it out. And then looked at many
things. We'd be flexible. You could work from home and do a lot of them.
Yes, we're all looking for things we can do from home. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we're looking at. We looked and looked and looked and looked and looked, and then until we landed on bookkeeping. And we're like, interesting. I don't know anything about bookkeeping. She doesn't know anything about bookkeeping, but I do have a client that told me that if I ever quit the bank, I could become their accountant. So those two things clicked. And then I did some research and I found the QuickBooks Pro Advisor program. And I'm like, okay, it was like $300 a year or something. It was fairly inexpensive. And I said, all right, let's do this. Let's become QuickBooks, whatever that is, QuickBooks certified, right? So we did that. My wife and I both became certified, and we were doing remote bookkeeping. This is before QuickBooks Online even existed, by using technology like GoToMyPC and some other technology that doesn't exist anymore, where you can log in remotely to somebody's computer and do the bookkeeping remotely. So that's how we started. And then we started marketing, we sent some postcards to brand new businesses. So really interesting life hack, by the way, and I think still works today, is we looked at the database in Florida. We're from Florida. We looked at the database of all the new businesses that were created during 2008.
You can do it every month.
Yeah. But in this particular case, we looked at every business that was created during 2008. And then we filtered by zip code. We only looked at the three zip codes that are sort of adjacent to where we live. And then we sent postcards on January 3rd, 7th, and 10th. It was like back to back. Okay. And it was like, want to start a new year with fresh QuickBooks? Call us. At this point, we had just gotten started. We don't really have a lot of clients. This is how we started. And I remember on the second postcard run, I got a phone call, and I was with my wife in the car, and I got a phone call, and then there was this dentist office that's like, hey, I heard you guys do QuickBooks. Can you come in and get started on Monday? Not even like how much you are, like nothing. It's like, can you get started on Monday? And I was like, well, sure. Let's talk about pricing or whatever. They're like, yeah, whatever. So I show up on Monday and I say, what do you need? And they're like, this is my problem. I'm like, yeah, we could totally help you with that. And I charge some ridiculous number, like $150 a month or something like that. I didn't even know the value of our work or anything like that. And they said, okay. And that's it. That's how we got started. We worked a bunch of hours for those $150, but we were getting paid to learn. And I'm 100% appreciative of, and this wasn't the only client. There was like from that postcard run, which cost us like maybe $3,000, we picked up about 7 clients. But after that, those 7 clients referred more clients, and that's kind of how it grew. And then my wife was doing most of the work herself from home. And then after a year of that, I basically saw enough of potential in the business to quit my banking job. And, I got up to my ears on credit card debt to be able to sustain not having, that income for that year. But I'm glad I did. I'm glad that within 3 to 4 years, I had maybe 50, 60,000 in credit card debt that I needed to survive during those first years. I was able to pay it back. So like the bookkeeping profession, just straight bookkeeping and QuickBooks consulting, ended up being really, really fruitful. Within 3 to 4 years, you just kind of had to have the patience for it. Then at some point in that journey in 2011, I finished a master's in taxation because I went back to school during that time.
My next question. Yeah.
Right. So you I finished a master's in taxation. Yeah. So while I was doing bookkeeping, I also realized that I needed to, you know, with some schooling, I needed to kind of sort of fill some gaps because I
was, although so you could charge more or so you could offer more services.
No, I think for the most part, it was, you know, like I was doing a lot of the bookkeeping with the limited information I knew and understood from working in the bank. Also, just quick background. It wasn't my first time touching QuickBooks. When I was 16, my dad used to give me some work like, hey, can you do this data entry? And my dad has always been sort of a financial
guy. Is that Garcia and Company that you're referring to?
Okay, yeah, that's why
I said 25 years.
Right. My dad's company is, it's 25 years. So my dad's been doing financial consulting forever. And he used to do like financial projections for business plans. And it required for me to load information from Excel into QuickBooks. But I really didn't know what I was doing. He just told me, do this, do that. And I did it. And it was just like a chore, really. So it wasn't my first interaction with QuickBooks, but I really never understood, you know, balancing a balance sheet and what an asset was.
Well, you weren't interested to go work for your dad, obviously. Like you did all these other things independently, but then somehow dovetailed into similar field and similar work.
Yes, it's
work.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. It did sort of make a full circle. So I was learning bookkeeping mechanically from videos I was watching on YouTube. I like to give a shout out to Seth David because I saw a lot of videos from Seth David, and I learned a lot of QuickBooks from Seth David. Nerd Enterprise, exactly.
Yeah, dope.
So, but there was a lot of knowledge gaps that I didn't understand. You know, some clients were starting asking me tax questions and some stuff, you know, on balancing equity. So I'm like, you know what? I'll go back to school. And I went back to school and I did a graduate program in accounting. And then I simultaneously stayed in school so I don't have to pay back my student loans. And I did a graduate program in taxation. So like in 2.5 years, I went from not knowing so much about accounting to like sort of, have literally 2 graduate
becoming
programs,
an
one accounting, one tax. Yeah. And then once I finished that program, I'm like, let's try the CPA thing. So that was the other, you know, I would say it's other journey, 9 months or 10 months, whatever it took me to take all the tests. And I passed the last exam in 2001. And now I had to go out and get my experience. And I would have to quit my job to get my experience, you know, to go work under another CPA. So I decided to do the opposite. I hired a CPA part-time to supervise my work for a whole year. So then she can sign my license. So I didn't have to quit my job per se. I literally had a CPA on staff.
You couldn't quit what you were building. You couldn't.
No, I can't. I couldn't.
Yeah.
I couldn't. So 2014, I got my CPA. So that's like officially when I got my CPA license was 2014. And like you said, I didn't do that to charge more. But charging more came with the territory.
Well, you're investing all that time in the education and learning. You know you're going to be charging more. That has to be one of the reasons you want to further your education. Obviously, you want to grow as a person and build what you can offer and your service offerings, but you're going to have to get paid more for all of that.
Yes.
Too.
Yeah. It comes with the territory. Not just getting educated, but just your experience should also, you know, warrant you just more charging power. Because you know more. You've been there, done that more.
So you joined YouTube in 2011. What were you doing on YouTube, or when did you start like actually taking that as... tell me that story, because you have over 17, almost 18 million views on your YouTube channel.
Yeah, so while I had my bookkeeping practice and I was a QuickBooks Pro advisor, I already had left the bank, someone out of nowhere calls me and says, hey, we need a trainer to teach a QuickBooks class.
Do you remember who called you?
There wasn't a known company, and I don't think they exist anymore. It was a company that existed to teach QuickBooks around the country, and they were paying the trainers like $400 for the weekend, and it was like Saturday, Sunday class. And they said, look, we lost our trainer, and can you do it next weekend? And I said, sure. And they asked me, well, have you done live training before? I mean, I did one-on-one training, but I hadn't done classroom training. And I said, yes. And they said, well, how many years of experience do you have? And for some reason, I think I was looking at the clock and it was 12 o'clock. And I said, 12? And they're like, okay, you're hired. And I'd never taught a class before. So that whole week, I went back to good old Best Buy.
When you said 12, they asked how many years of experience?
Teaching, yeah.
Teaching? And you said 12? I guess in some ways you're working with businesses, you're teaching them, right?
I don't know. Whatever. It's the only lie I've ever told in my life. So anyway, so they said, yes, you're hired. They sent me, they emailed me the curriculum, and they said, this is what you're going to teach for 2 days. We're going to send laptops to the hotel. We have 25 people coming in. And I freaked out. I called my wife. It's like, hey, I just committed to something I've never done before. Let's get a babysitter for our daughter and let's go to the hotel in Boca. It was like an hour from my house. Let's get the hotel in Boca and let's teach this class. Come with me. And she's like, okay, sure. I'm game. So we went back to Best Buy. I bought a digital camera and I recorded the class. And I said, look, I'm going to teach this. If I bomb it, at least I have the video so I can go back and figure out what happened. Ooh. And I used the same video to practice. So like a couple of days before the class.
And you got it at Best Buy too, a little nod.
Yeah, I got it at Best Buy. It's all interconnected. So I recorded myself at home doing the class just so as a practice. And I watched it. And this whole week, I obsessed about teaching this class. So the weekend came. I taught the class. I recorded the class. Needless to say, this is really low quality video and audio. Like, I didn't know anything about that stuff. And I finished the class. And then I loved it. Like, I was like, holy crap, I'm born to do this. Like people like clapping at the end and telling me thank you. Like, that was a particular type of high that you can't replicate. Like, just like seeing somebody else feeling empowered after you taught them how to do something, it's a really, really powerful thing. So I walked out of that class saying, this is what I'm going to do for a living. And good thing I recorded it, because if somebody else were to call me, I don't have to lie about the 12 years or whatever. I can, take little snippets of that video and say, look, this is a sample of what I've done before. So I took that little video and I posted it in YouTube. I didn't make it public. I posted it in YouTube. And then anytime that I was offering team training, group trainings, I had that sort of as a sample. And that video, I can send you a link, but you can't make it private because it's pretty embarrassing. But I can send you a link so you can kind of see a little bit of like what that was. So that was when I started a YouTube channel, and I had that video there just for the purposes of showing it to someone if they were to ask me, hey, do you have any skills training in a group setting?
Wow.
Fast forward 3 years, I didn't use the YouTube channel for anything else. Fast forward 3 years, I started a webinar series with my friend Michelle Long. And this is something that we created right before QuickBooks Connect 2014. And we got into it to help us promote it. So it was great. So we had like 300 or 400 people on a webinar day one. And it was a very successful webinar series for 4 or 5 years. We had 500 to 600 people average showing up to our biweekly webinars. So I would say 3 or 4 episodes in, people were asking me, well, how can I see the replay? How can I see the replay? And I had to reply to them, the go to webinar replay link. And I got tired of doing that. I said, you know what? I'm just going to post the recordings of those webinars in YouTube. This is without me wanting to be a YouTuber or trying to be a YouTuber. Like, I really didn't understand the potential value of becoming a YouTuber. I had no idea what I had just started. But I started posting these webinar recordings, and little by little, I started getting comments and questions in these webinar recordings. And some of the comments and questions were, hey, can you cover prepayments to vendors? Can you cover reconciliation discrepancies? Can you cover? So like the comments in YouTube of the videos that I was posting, which were fully sort of prepared webinars, became the content, the ideation for the next webinar. And then little by little, people were saying, hey, these videos are too long. So I said, you know what? I'll take the webinar and I'll cut it into like 6 segments. So the segment where I did, a trick with a journal entry, the segment where I did a trick with this, and I started doing shorter videos. And then those got more views and more clicks and some shares, and started going, what if I just start doing separate videos in YouTube that complement the webinar? So sometimes when the webinar was over, I was like, man, I wish I had covered this thing. I wish I had covered that thing. So I would then, the one thing that I wish I had covered, I would post that into YouTube. That became its own separate video. So now I started emailing people the recording and like sort of the bonus. And then I just like little by little, I just got into the habit of like recording extra little things, editing. And that was the whole thing. That was a whole learning process until it got to a point that YouTube said, hey, you are eligible for monetization. And I was like, okay, let's see what that is. Well, you get paid, point whatever cents per view or whatever. And I started looking at the stuff and I'm like, I look at Seth Davis' channel. He's got at that point, about 10,000 subscribers. I see how many views he's got. And I'm saying, I start calculating. If my channel was as big as Seth David's, you know, who was my inspiration for like my channel, I could make $200 a month doing nothing. And I'm like, okay, let's see where this rabbit hole takes me.
Wow.
So I started just creating content. And, you know, 8 years later, I have over 200,000 subscribers. I just had millions of views combined in the videos. And my channel actually pays me enough to pay my mortgage at this point. It's been a very positive, net positive
firm,
journey.
And your firm started at $150 a month, and this idea started at about $200. So you think small, but it ends up getting big.
Right. I mean, you always have to accept. Yeah, I think you have to accept the small of now, but you have to envision it growing. Like you can't get stuck on like this is gonna be it forever. Like you just have
to. We did a whole episode on that with Jason Statz, and you did an episode with him on his daily show fairly recently. I listened to that one. That was a great one. And he said, he always says to think smaller because I think too big. Everything I do, I think way too big. And he said to think smaller. And you're thinking just realistically, like on the now, what can I do now to move this forward now? And what's the next thing? And a lot of it just sounds like it was happening by accident. A lot of everything you did was accidental.
It's accidental, but it's also understanding how inertia works.
Ooh.
So like none of these things really, truly just, I randomly started a YouTube channel. Well, that didn't happen randomly. Like, you know, there was inertia. I was teaching, I was training. So I did a video to record the training so I can verify my own skills, make sure I'm doing good.
Is it inertia
good,
or momentum?
Improving. Well, I would say both. I would say both, right?
Because so I see them as two different things.
That's good. Good. You know, because
this is interesting to me. I want to hear the description of these two.
So yeah. I would say momentum would be more like I'm accumulating things and having it ramp up quickly. By inertia, I mean I was using a YouTube channel for something else. Like my purpose originally was to, again, showcase a recording I did so I can sell.
It was a holding place so people could view
training. It. Correct. And then I was using it to hold the webinar recordings so I don't have to email everybody, you know, the link. Like I said, just look it up on YouTube. It's there. You know, so like I was using it as just sort of like a side storage thing. And then it became something sort of, that's what I mean by inertia. It became sort of like by itself. Like I was just creating content, put it in there, really not looking for a specific thing to come out of it, but the process of creating that content brought some new ideas in. It brought in, obviously, some new revenue in, but it brought in some sort of new energies and new directions and new requests, right? Okay. So that became a guiding force for the things that then I was creating purposefully, and that's when I created momentum. Like me taking 2 hours out of the week dedicated to creating videos for YouTube, that's momentum I built, right? But the webinars that I was recording and just saving there, that's what I meant by inertia. That's why I separated the two things. But the two things ended up just basically becoming one.
Yeah, but your light bulb moment was, I can make a little bit of side money on this. Like, this could be fun. And it was also a way that you could channel that energy and that high you got from teaching.
And exactly.
And I'll bet that you have more fun doing this than you did doing taxes and doing bookkeeping.
Totally 100%. Totally 100%.
I would believe so. So meanwhile,
creating videos, webinars, teaching.
And your audience, though, your audience for these classes and the people you were teaching were small business owners that you could potentially help at your practice. So you did kind of, in a way, you know, you wanted to possibly turn this into a revenue stream, but it was also to attract new clients. This was a lead funnel.
Yeah, so interesting enough, until I got the first clients from YouTube, I wasn't doing this to get clients from YouTube. I actually didn't know this was like a way to get clients from YouTube. Like,
because you saw it as more ambiguous and further away. Your clients were closer to you and your clients were real, and this was just people watching videos.
Right, correct. It was this faceless entity doing this. But it wasn't until I got my first client from it that I realized, holy crap, this is marketing. You know,
this is better than sending postcards.
Totally, 100%. But what's interesting is, even though my channel's monetized and I get paid for my channel,
which is the cheese. What you get paid for on the channel is the cheese.
totally the cheese. But if I didn't get paid in YouTube, I would still do it no matter what, because the business I've gotten from people saying, hey, I know you're the expert, you know, can I hire you, has been much higher than what YouTube has paid me. But I think, honestly, what YouTube has helped me do is it helped me build such a strong personal brand where people trust me. They trust my judgment. They trust my technical skills, where it's made it really easy for me to increase my rate. It's been made it very easy for me to sell my services. Like before YouTube, I had to do this whole thing to convince people that I know what I'm doing, where now people have to convince me that they're a good fit to work with me. So it's just been just a complete contrast. And I got to tell you, walking into a new client, walking into a new business opportunity, knowing that the customer already trusts you and your judgment and seen you work and heard you speak, where you don't have to sell yourself. And the 15, 20 minutes that you have budgeted to try to sell your services, you can focus it on the customer's needs and the solution rather than focusing on selling yourself. It changes the entire conversation, makes it more productive, increases your closing rate. So I also made it a habit after I had enough content that when I get a referral from someone and that referral hasn't seen me on YouTube, I would probably tell the client, I started creating videos just for those people to get people accustomed to understand who Hector the YouTuber is before coming to talk to Hector the accountant.
Well, it's an entirely different feeling. When you're talking to somebody and you know they know you and they, you know they trust you, it gives you a different level of confidence to help them too.
Correct.
And that's why I didn't want to yourself.
Right. That's why I stopped taking clients that don't know me from YouTube. So when somebody says, hey, this is my accountant, he does great taxes, and they call me and I'm like, okay, did you find me on YouTube? It's like, no, somebody told me you're a good accountant. I'm like, okay, what do you need? I ask them what they need, get off the phone. I say, I'm going to send you an email. And if there wasn't a video just for them, like a video that talked about that particular need, I would create it right there and then 20, 30 minute video.
More content. Giving was later.
And then I said, yeah, exactly. It was a content that I sent to them. I said, hey, I created this video. I was inferring kind of what your issues are. You were talking about having problems with your POs, not attaching to your bills or whatever it was, some technical thing. So I created this quick video for you. Watch this first before we go on to a consultation. And sometimes I'll go back and go, wow, that video helped me. I don't need a consultation anymore. And it would feel like a loss, but it wasn't. It wasn't a loss because the fact that someone had a question, I answered it. It's in YouTube. Now this becomes part of the permanent library of content, right? Yeah. Or those people could
the
come
next
back
person
and go,
who has
yes,
that you question, you're answering.
Right. But they can go back and say, you solved the problem. Thank you. Can I hire you for another problem that's bigger than this? It's sort of, this was the baseline of a truly much bigger problem. And when somebody goes, like when you have two layers of problems, you have like layer problem one and then layer two. When you get the one out of the way, you get
you
that
surface level
out of the way,
problems and core problems.
The second one, people are willing to pay more, bottom line. So even though it will take less time to solve level two, because you already kind of unwinded the first one, the second one might probably take less to fix and they will pay more for it. But you have the credibility built from the video you created for helping them solve their first level problem. So when I understood that, it unlocked the whole world for me to the point that, you know, like when people call my office, I'm the level three consultant. You know, when you call tech support, there's a level one, level two, level three. You know, I'm the level three consultant. So we tell customers, hey, you know, tell us what the problem is. This is a level one problem. This is a level two problem. You know, if you want Hector, some people want to work with me directly because, you know, I'm a YouTube celebrity or whatever. People want to work with me. It's like, okay, you get to Hector when it's a level three problem. It's like, well, you know, some people say, how do I know it's a level three problem? Well, when it's about a $10,000 job. And yeah. People go, oh, no, it's level one, level two, no problem. You know, but then there's always one out of 20 or 30 that go, $10,000, yeah, I think I could do that. Let's scale this to a level three problem. Let's get Hector in.
And that's so what's worth your time to work on something because you're doing so many different things.
Exactly.
Your time's got to be real valuable. And
right. It's just there's a limited amount of one-on-one customers I can take per year. I mean, it just is because I'm doing videos and content and conferences and teaching and creating classes and running my firm and teaching my employees how to do what they got to do. Like, I'm just doing so many things that my one-on-one is so limited that I have to price it. I have to price it in a way that 90% of people say no. Like, I have to, like, it's sure. I strategically need 90. if
because it's not scaled,
if only 60% of people say no,
you. Like that right. person going to you is still relying on you, and you become the bottleneck of this whole content hub too.
Correct.
Because
correct.
That's what people are looking for, and you're trying to scale beyond that. And I know that's what you talked about in Jason's. But what one thing I want to touch on too, back to the firm conversation, you went into it with just bookkeeping, and. Mm-hmm. And then you expand your knowledge. Over 2 years, you became CPA, master's in tax. You're doing tax. You're doing all of the things that you added.
About 4 years.
To the
about 4 years.
4 years,
to become a CPA.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
4 years. Like our accounting high is 4 years, and we're still in year one. But 4 years doing that to learn that those skills. Mm-hmm. You're progressing. You're becoming a YouTube star. You're doing all of these things. And then you just recently removed all tax from your operations. You separated it out. And then now you're going back to square one of just doing bookkeeping, accounting.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting observation. So, yeah, so I started my business. It was strictly bookkeeping and QuickBooks Consulting. Then we added payroll. Then we added sales tax. Then we added income tax. Then we added consulting. Then we added training. Then we added QuickBooks sales through the reseller channel. Like it just kept expanding and expanding and expanding. And then the core of our service, which is bookkeeping, and it ended up being such a small piece of it. And it was all cheese. Everything else was cheese, right? Because the bookkeeping.
Well, everything was monster cables, cables among cables. The right. cables were getting interconnected and you couldn't even pull them apart.
It was starting to get messy.
You know, some of those monster cable packs had six different cables in them and you had to connect them to the back of the TV. And then you also had the other AV cables in there. You just need an HDMI. You just need to go simple again.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. So the name of my company is Quick Bookkeeping. And, you know, our original goal was to do the bookkeeping really fast because my one client in the bank told me my CPA takes so long and when I need my financial statements, you know, to give it to my banker, I can't have them on time. That was the core. That was the core vision is we're going to do bookkeeping super fast. Obviously accurate. That's table stakes, but we're going to do it super fast. But then we started doing so many things, you know, on top of that, adding all the things I'm doing with content creation and stuff, we started sort of getting away from the core part. And then we started analyzing that what we set out to do 14 years later became a really small piece. So I said, I'm going to start removing all this other noise out of it, and I'm going to start sort of spinning it out. So I started spinning out payroll with ADP. So I'm starting to get clients using ADP on their own. It didn't make the QuickBooks people very happy, but hey.
QuickBooks has their own problems with payroll. We can talk about that.
And look, ADP is not perfect either. There are some clients that I wish I'd kept them on QuickBooks payroll, and there are some clients that I'm happy they're on ADP. That's a different conversation for a different episode. We could talk about that stuff.
But shout out to ADP. I use ADP too. I love ADP.
Yeah, totally. ADP has been great. So moving some clients out of payroll, that takes away the payroll responsibility, which is pretty heavy. Sales tax, our clients are too small to move out to like an Avalara type of solution. So we're still sort of attached to the sales tax. But then I basically spun off my entire tax practice and I sold it to another firm, which I'm still a part owner of because I want to
help guide.
I think I'm going to help grow that firm separately. We're going to build a tax firm that's tax only, no QuickBooks, no bookkeeping, no payroll, no sales tax. It's
focused.
Income tax only by itself, 100% focused. So I spun that off. I'm in the process right now transferring all the clients over there. I'm in the process of training. We took our best bookkeeper in our firm who also became an enrolled agent. And we gave him the opportunity to run that firm. You know, under our advice, you know, we still have myself and my partner, Alejandro, who's also a CPA, and my other partner, Alexander. Like, we're still sort of like giving them guidance, but I'm separating that completely. And I'm bringing QuickBooks Keeping back to its core to do accounting and bookkeeping really, really, really well without having to add the cheese on top of it. We'll still offer QuickBooks Consulting. We'll still offer advisory, which is the cheese for sure. But I want to make sure that the bookkeeping, totally 100%, but the bookkeeping itself needs to be profitable. And we got away from that so quickly because we were chasing the shiny objects.
The monster cables.
All the stuff that was profitable.
You weren't even selling good TVs. You were selling nice monster cables, but you weren't even selling good TVs.
Exactly. So we are at this very moment that we're recording this, we're going through that transformation. And we made the decision that because we're able to take away all that extra noise and focus on the bookkeeping, we're switching to Ron Baker's subscription model. So starting next month, our bookkeeping practice is going to send a subscribe, unsubscribe link to the current customers, where they can, from now on, if they want to work with us, they have to click that subscribe button, and they have, you know, we have a whole entire...
With our friends from Anchor, right? You're working with
them
to help.
Yes, with Anchor. I sat down with Anchor for months, and we built, we already had a shell, but I told them this is exactly the experience that I want my customers to see, is I want them to see, you know, the core
awesome?
Version.
You're building it out
add-ons.
For you, and they're turning it into their product. I did
correct.
That with
but the reason why they did that is because of my YouTube channel. Because if I wasn't YouTube famous, they wouldn't have cared about me doing that. I mean,
we all know this.
I'm willing to believe that they are customer centric, that they want to build things for their customers. I'm totally willing to believe
but
that they would have done it for the average accountant.
I talked to them on the early stages of this. They were doing something new, and they needed Ron because he's the thought leader. You're also mm-hmm. a thought leader, and they're using you guys to take your thoughts and synthesize it into their product. So
correct.
Yeah, they were very smart to do that. And
I think so.
I've yet to see what they've done,
yeah.
But it was the same thing Ignition did with me with with option pricing, you know, with the three
yep.
options and the pricing. Ignition didn't have it. And Ron Baker was talking about that and had been.
Sure.
And we were doing it at our firm with PDFs. And just I was creating it in a spreadsheet, turned it into a PDF. And that's what I would show the client. I needed a platform that could do that. And Ignition,
yep.
you know, took the time and spent months, you know, putting that together, and they had three options after that. So that was
that's active now. The three options
active
is
what
now.
We use at our firm.
Very good.
We're kind of going away from that. We want to go more into here's what we can do for you. Here's a subscription.
Yeah.
We've been doing that too, but we're on Ignition still. I'm using Anchor for Accounting High actually. So for the other stuff, I'm using Anchor. So I'm kind of using both. Great platforms, both of them. But
sure.
But back to the cheese, back to the monster cables. So what you've effectively done is you started adding a lot of different devices to your one core TV. The TV is the bookkeeping, and you're
yep.
adding a PlayStation, an Xbox, a Nintendo, a DVD player, a Blu-ray player. What's the other disc? Like everything. You're adding all these devices.
Yeah,
you got all these cables in the back. Everything's all over the place. And the real thing was the cheese, or let's say the satellite, the stuff coming in from YouTube. So that's sort of like
right.
the satellite. That's not even wires. There's no wires to that. It's just beaming into the TV.
I would say if you want to stay within this analogy, when you go buy a TV, today you go to Best Buy and buy a TV. You can buy a Samsung with the exact same spec as the Sony, but the Sony is $400 more. And then you ask the salespeople, hey, why is the Sony $400 more? And most salespeople tell you because it's Sony. Because if you actually go
right.
look at, you know, if you actually look at, you know, feature by feature, in some cases, even the Samsung beats it, like just spec-wise, feature. But people buy brand. People like the Sony brand. So I think that YouTube has become the Sony to the Samsung for me, where people look at, you know, my firm or working with me directly versus any other accountant. You know, I have the brand element. So people say, why are you paying? Why am I charging $400, $500 more?
YouTube,
because of brand.
Well, your personal brand became your X factor.
My personal brand.
Your
absolutely.
Personal brand but, is the Sony. YouTube's not that. YouTube is what you used to create that personal brand.
It's the channel, correct.
But
true.
Your personal yeah, brand is everywhere anyway. People know Hector. Not. I mean, I guess they could associate you as the YouTube star, but still, you're Hector Garcia. They want to work with you. You're that brand that can charge a whole lot more. YouTube was just the channel. YouTube
correct.
Became the means to create that, and it.
But I would. I'm very appreciative to YouTube. I would argue that without YouTube, probably none of this would have.
Well,
happened.
YouTube could
I mean,
be
like,
your DirecTV or the the Netflix or whatever you know, channel that you're using to create that brand, and the brand lives on its own. You've created that personal brand that now you can't separate from either. You know, then and you talked about this in the episode with Jason. You know, you couldn't. You know, you're trying to scale this or figure out, can you put other people in videos and do other videos with other people? And I think you're experimenting with that. It is very hard because
very hard,
you also can't give up the control over that. And that's one thing that I've realized in my life and in my firm. If I give up the control I have over something and I can get out of my own way and get out of the way of everybody else, they could do it just as good or better than me in most cases. They're running my firm for me. My team's running the firm, and I have a firm that runs itself now because I got out of the way. And I'm out here now creating these own other channels. Like I'm doing the raps, I'm doing this podcast, and I don't want to get in the way of that either. So I've turned that into a brand and tried to make that a brand that's outside of me. I don't think it's going to be possible with the raps, but it's been possible. It's going to, I think is going to be possible with Accounting High, where I can have other instructors, other teachers outside of just me. And that's been a challenge, but I'm learning, you know, I'm learning.
If I think you've done a good job with the branding element and you're sort of all in, you know, with, you know, this is what the core of the podcast is, a conversation between you and the guests, or
between anybody, you and I right
else
now,
from Accounting High and the guests. That's the core of the podcast. That's what people tune into. But the intro and the outro is what wrap it together and remind you that this is all staying within a theme.
Is
and
that
I think
the
you've
cheese?
Done a really, yeah, I'm not sure, but I do think you've done a good job at keeping the branding element of the podcast that way. It just feels the same every time. Even when I was here and listening to the intro, it's like, oh, that's really cool. You know, like, you're committed to it. And I think that's going to help you succeed in, you know, in sophomore year, junior year, senior year. Like as we wrap up the freshman year, I think that staying consistent with that brand is the key element of it. Cause anybody can do a podcast and a conversation with people. And that's what podcasts are essentially. But staying on brand is what helps people feel familiar. And then when they feel familiar, they're more willing to listen to this over something else because it's familiar.
And trust.
Same thing as, you know, yeah, exactly. That's the trust element. You trust it. Consistency is trust. Like what people trust is predictability. Okay. And that's it. When they watch you do something in YouTube for an hour or two, and they're like, okay, I guess you know how to fix that. They can feel that they can predict that the thing they're going to do with you, it's going to be successful because they've seen you do it once. So like repeating and being consistent, it's the key to everything, I would say.
Dude, that is beautiful. I got one anecdotal story before we close out. When I first met you, you had no voice and you are a talker. Like, you had just had the surgery and you were at QuickBooks Connect and you were there with a notepad. And you wrote something and you came, we started talking and I was so excited to meet you because, you know, I had heard about you. I know who you are and I wanted to say what's up. I wanted to chat and you didn't say anything. You mouthed a couple things and you did. And then you wrote something on there and you said, I listened to your show and you opened up your phone and you showed me like in the queue, like you're just.
That I was subscribed. Yeah. 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 That I was subscribed on the podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. That was like. That meant a lot to me, man. Appreciate you doing that.
That's
cool. That was so cool. And I said to you then, I said, I definitely want to do an episode with you soon. We'll wait till you get your voice. And you've got your voice. You're awesome. I appreciate you coming on. You're the trusted cheese of accounting. You're the trusted cheese of accounting. That might be the next
name
of this episode.
I'll take the title. Yeah,
dope. Appreciate you, homie. Class dismissed. All right, man.